Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The communities east of the river here in Washington, D.C. are often called the Forgotten Gem. A group of women is working to make sure that the women living there are not forgotten. Well, Black women east of the river is working to provide support for health, workforce development, and many other ways. And tonight, for our Wellness Wednesday conversation, we meet two of the women behind this effort. Nakisha Neal Jones is the executive director of Black Women East of the River, and Marsha Williamson is a cancer survivor also working with this organization. If you have comments, if you have questions about our Wellness Wednesday conversation, you can give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H Fisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Marsha, Nakisha, thank you both for joining us for this conversation.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Let me ask you first, Nakisha, what was the genesis of this? This organization has been around now for about 4 years or so. What started this?
There was some really intentional work to focus on what we can do that would be impactful and lasting for Black women in Ward 7 and 8. And so a foundation, the Jane Bancroft Robinson Foundation, really sat down, looked at their resources, and decided to bring together a group of women. There were 30 women that came together.
30?
During that process. Wow. Almost 30. 28, well, I believe is the exact number.
That's close enough. Yeah, wow.
All of them were residents of the community or led organizations in the community or have what we call generational ties. Many of you know that there are a number of people who have grown up east of the river but have moved out due to some unfortunate circumstances. So we wanted to be inclusive of that experience too. And so when great minds come together, great things happen. So they decided to focus on reducing cancer mortality and increasing health-related career workforce success. Mm-hmm. Marsha was there. She was one of those 28 who was there from the start. So she can definitely talk about the experience of what it was like to be in the room. But it definitely, initially, it took some level setting because generally people with power or money foundations don't usually come into a space and say, we want to listen to what you say is best. And so first there was some level setting to understand that this is really what was happening here. And then prioritizing the lived experiences of those women and taking that into how we implemented everything that we did about the planning process and now how we're implementing the program.
It sounds like Hamilton. And Marsha, you were in the room where it happened.
Can I just add to
it? Yeah, please, go ahead.
So in terms of the genesis of what prompted this, it was noted that women in Ward 7 and 8 had the lowest rate, survival rate from cancer than any other wards in the city. And so we began to ask why and really dig deep to the root cause, and that helped us with our plan.
This hits home for you.
Definitely.
Because you are a cancer survivor. So talk to me about, as we just said, what was it like being in the room where it happened, those first conversations? Obviously, this started with issues of health, but it has certainly blossomed.
Yes. So in the room, most of the people there were health-related professionals. Mm-hmm. I was a layperson. Mm-hmm. I was a representative from Ward 7 with the lived experience. So I am a native Washingtonian. I've lived in Ward 7 for approximately 25 years, and I am a Black woman thriving and surviving from breast cancer. And what I had to navigate through in terms of resources in Ward 7 and 8, it was really a nightmare. And many people don't have the fortitude, the resources, or just the energy when you're going through something like breast cancer to do what I was able to do. So I created my own village. And so we talked about that. We interviewed several women and created roadmaps, journey maps, to show how our journeys intercepted, how they were the same, how they were different. And so many wonderful things have happened as a result of that with the plan that we created.
Let me ask you real quick, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful, thank you. I'm in my 6th year of survivorship.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Good, congratulations.
Thank you, yeah. To God be the glory. Yeah,
how about that? That's a word, definitely, definitely a word. We are talking to members of Black Women East of the River. It's an organization that is trying to improve the quality of life for women in Wards 7 and 8 here in the District of Columbia. If you have a question, if you have a comment, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, you know, Nakisha, even after these, you know, 4 years, you can't just do this kind of boots on the ground work without some financial support. And you spoke briefly about some of the things that have been happening. Talk to us about that, please.
Thank you for bringing that up. It's certainly important. They say money isn't everything, but it's a really important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we are grateful, again, for that relationship with the Jane Bancroft Robinson Foundation. They are a strategic partner. They are now serving as our fiscal agent, and they continue to fund us. They've already invested over $3 million in this work and are continuing to support and see this initiative through the long term. Our mission is really aligned with their mission of serving women east of the river and strengthening organizations east of the river. And so our relationship is changing because we are no longer a part of the foundation, but we still receive supports from them. And there is room at the table for others. We also recently received funding from the Greater Washington Community Foundation's Health Equity Fund to support our work with employers, ensuring that they are aware of what is going to be necessary to help Black women east of the river be successful in health-related careers, understand what kind of environment is needed, not only to attract people, but to retain them and ensure that they advance over time. And so we're certainly grateful for that partnership as well. And we are making more room so others can join us in this journey.
Marcia, when you were going through breast cancer, not only in the midst of it, but the recovery and everything else, you just said looking for resources was difficult. What was it that you think you needed that you couldn't get?
We can start by talking about food and the fact that the better foods, supermarkets, Whole Foods, places of that sort, are not east of the river. Things that I took for granted before, when I wanted fresh produce, when I wanted fresh meats, I would just easily go to Maryland, Virginia, D.C. When I had my surgery, I was unable to drive for approximately 2 months.
Yeah.
I think it was a shame that I had to get my surgery at Georgetown University, that there was not a hospital in Ward 7 and 8 that I trusted with my life.
Mm-hmm. And so, and now, because you are now actively participating in making sure that the women east of the river are getting what you didn't get and what you feel that you needed regarding support, what does that work look like?
Well, one of the things that I focus on that many women don't consider is that they can get more than one doctor's opinion, diagnosis. So many of them have gone to the same doctor forever, and whatever they say, they go with it. In my case, I had three opinions. Two opinions wanted to do a lumpectomy. Mm-hmm. The third opinion suggested a mastectomy. And I went with the third opinion, and I think it was the best decision I ever made, because when they actually did the surgery, they saw it was more extensive than they had initially thought it was. Mm-hmm. So some folks are like trapped in their environment. They don't have the transportation to reach out and go to other wards and experience other hospitals. They have transportation issues, things of that sort. So that's the message that we get out. There's so many things. But the food thing, the fact that we're basically in a food desert, mm-hmm. in that area, that's very crucial. And so many of us rely on things like the dollar store for our deodorants and things of that sort. So getting the message out that the aluminum in the deodorant could be causing cancer and things of that sort. Research is still out that you need to invest in yourself to get the best. But if you don't have the best stores and resources around you, you don't even have a chance to explore that opportunity.
This is our Wellness Wednesday conversation. We're talking about Black Women East of the River. It's an organization that is trying to improve the quality of life for women living east of the river here in Washington, D.C., specifically wards 7 and 8. If you have a comment, if you have a question about the organization or what may be needed in wards 7 and 8 when it comes to women's resources, health or otherwise, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Nikisha, you grew up east of the river.
Yes.
You're from that area. So you have a unique point of view for what Black women east of the river need. And not only, not just related to health, because as I said in the beginning, this isn't just about health. This is more broadly quality of life, workforce issues, for example. From your perspective, how have things changed? And what do you see as the most important thing that women east of the river really need now in 2023?
I do want to say our name is Black Women Thriving East okay. of the River. And it's so important to focus on that word of thriving, because that is not the narrative that we hear when we, or that we see or envision when we hear East of the River. And it's very important for us to know and celebrate how we are doing well and how more of us can do well. And thriving for us, it's about more than surviving. It's really about having all that we need to be able to meet our needs, our family's needs, and our community needs in a way that is life-sustaining. And so my experience growing up east of the river, so I was born in public housing in Ward 8 and grew up in Ward 7 and currently live in Ward 7, where I've lived for most of my life. And so the city itself is changing. And so just as the city is changing, there's been significant change in our communities. Yet some things stay the same, you know, as we think about access to resources like the ones that Marcia mentioned. There's still some significant challenges there. And I think what is important is that we not continue to look at ourselves as deficits, as problems, that we begin to recognize and lift up what is working well and how do we strengthen that so that our community will be more well, instead of more deficit-based, because we can spend our lives just focused on the problems and we'll stay there. And so what I think is really important is a shift in perspective and then a commitment to using the resources that we have. We have some amazing leaders like Marcia. Mm-hmm. We have some amazing institutions and communities that, despite the circumstances and lack of access to resources, they have done well and sustained themselves. And I think by being more collaborative and coordinating the resources that are coming into our communities that we will actually see real differences.
Before I go to a break and before I take phone calls, including Andrew calling from D.C. and Lori calling from Maryland, we are going to talk to you, so please stay with us. For those who need to access the resources that Black Women Thriving East of the River is offering, how can someone find out about it beyond just this conversation?
Thank you for asking. So they can go to our website. It's at thrivingeotr.org.
Slowly. Thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Dot.
No, start the whole thing again.
Okay. Thriving. EOTR.
Thriving EOTR.
Mm-hmm. Dot org.
Dot org. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thriving EOTR.org. As always, that web address will be posted on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. But we are going to continue this Wellness Wednesday conversation with Black Women Thriving East of the River. As I said, Andrew calling from D.C., Lori calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you as well. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That is on WHUR. We'll be back with this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is our Wellness Wednesday conversation. We are talking to Black Women Thriving East of the River, an organization providing quality of life support for women in wards 7 and 8 right here in Washington, D.C. Nakisha Neal Jones is the executive director. Marsha Williamson is a cancer survivor. She also works with the organization. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 9-7-8-1-0. You are welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Andrew calling from D.C. Andrew, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment
sure.
on the deficit of Ward 7 and 8. And one of the greatest deficits that we are experiencing is health care. When the grounds of D.C. General were dissipated, the whole health system failed for the 7 and 8 ward persons. Because going into them other wards, as the sisters were saying, you know, not having the transportation, you know what I mean? And that was the greatest hospital ever. I'm 66 years old, lived here all my life. There has not been a hospital still to the day in the Washington, D.C. area that provides the service to D.C. General. I fault the mayor. I fault the mayor for not opening or letting Black businesses thrive with better produce, fresher meat. Stores coming up, but they restaurants. That was all I had to say.
Okay, Andrew, thank you so much. Marsha, any thoughts for Andrew?
I definitely agree with him, but even just having D.C. General along with, I think, one other hospital is just not enough, especially when you look at the other wards and they have so many university-based hospitals. They're teaching hospitals. They're up with the current practices. We all deserve that same expertise. Mm-hmm. Another issue that I had to give blood work and lab work on a regular. One time, I couldn't connect with anyone to take me across the bridge to another area for it. So I went to a local lab, and they were understaffed, they were overcrowded, the facility itself was not clean to the point that I left. Mm-hmm. After waiting for over an hour for services, I connected with someone and I went in the George Washington area. I was in and out in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that people experience a lot. So someone who's trying to juggle a lot of things, when one lab work takes up the whole day, they're often not going to go to their follow-up appointments and get the services they need on a regular basis. So we just need more services, quality services.
Yeah, which brings us back to why you ladies are here in the first place, because whether it is whether it's access to services or, you know, like this organization who provides education, support, and is a conduit to the services that women east of the river need. I think that, you know, you're only 4 years old. You needed to be 40 years old because these, you know, these things. And you know, like you said, you both have mm-hmm. been in this community, mm-hmm. and you know that there has been a need for an organization like this. And honestly, not just east of the river, Nikisha, there's an organization that does this kind of work, that should be doing this kind of work around the city.
Mm-hmm. And around the country as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that the caller talked about and that Marcia talked about as well was systems. And that is really, if we had started this work 40 years ago focusing on systemic injustices and disparities, then we do believe that our systems would be in different places and that there would be more access to resources. And what we mean by that is we really are trying to look at what is the root? So asking the question of why at least 10 times until we get to what is the root and why are there disparities and who's making decisions and how can we influence that and how can we ensure that over time there's going to be a policy, there's going to be a practice, there's going to be a way that people engage that is different and that actually will have change in both. And those systems are everywhere. You know, we're talking about the cancer care and the workforce systems, and we know that by improving them, this is going to have ripple effects all over. First, we're centering Black women because they are centered in our community. They are moms, they are caregivers, they are partners.
They hold the purse strings for families, usually.
Absolutely.
We wear
absolutely.
S's on our chests.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. And the backbone of many community organizations as well. And so by focusing there, we definitely believe that we're going to impact our entire community. But certainly as we do this work and others see it, these are things that we hope will be replicated. And if we're talking about systems change, that won't just benefit women east of the river. It will benefit women all around our city, and we hope beyond that.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lori, calling from Maryland. Lori, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Like she was saying, thriving Black women. How can they thrive when they don't have education? How can they thrive when they don't have the support system or wasn't raised by a mother or father to know how to be a mother to the children that they have? And then you're dealing with mental health illnesses. You got to look at the 5 years of this pandemic thing. So how did that impact them? It's a lot of impact going on. And then you got the families that doesn't know where to go to get resources. Like she was saying, I was raised in Southeast in Ward 8, Marion Barron. Used to walk the streets and talk to everybody. And that's when we were really getting some help. Right now, it's about restructuring the family as a whole. That's setting up places in different areas, mainly Ward 8. There's no YMCA. There's no Boys and Girls Club. There's nothing for the kids to run to but the streets. And to get a hold of a gun or to find your child dead. And that's a sad thing. Hmm. I came up with this thing. I've been writing for years, and I wanted to present it to Marion Barron. I'm a retired correction officer, so I came across a whole lot. within a 20-year period. So it's more about restructuring the family. Who do we start with? The mothers. If they're dealing with mental health illnesses, let's deal with that. And if they're dealing with not knowing how to be a parent, let's deal with that. And then they'll stop them from running into the street to find help from anybody.
Lori, thank you so much for your phone call, which brings me to my next question, Nikisha, that I mentioned before the break. What other resources does Black Women Thriving East of the River offer? We've already spoken about, you know, that health education piece, but it's not just that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So we are implementing a scholarship program for women who are interested in health-related careers. What we've found is that not only is it helpful for Black women who are getting cancer treatment to have more providers who look like them, but it's also an industry and a system that pays very well. And so we are trying to help more women, whether they would like to be a community health worker or a doctor or an IT specialist within that system. We're launching a scholarship program that will help them to get access to that. We are also, Marsha mentioned our work, not by name, but by patient bill of rights is what she's referring to. And that's the work that is focused on helping women understand what their rights are, also helping healthcare providers understand how to engage with women. And then we're doing work on the employer side because it's not just about preparing the person. The employment space has to be ready as well. In all of this work, we understand the challenges that our communities are dealing with. We understand the multiple roles that they play. And so we are providing wraparound supports in all that we do. Like, even if we ask someone to come out to a meeting, understanding what it takes for them to do that, and we value their time and that we compensate them for that. And so that is just generally a part of our approach. Those are the active interventions, is what we call them right now. But we've got nearly 30 of them that we are looking to launch more of over time that are all related to how do we help Black women to be well and to get to life-sustaining wages for them and their families.
You know, Marsha, Lori did paint a rather dark picture of the world east of the river. And I would say two things about that. First of all, that no matter what difficult circumstances you were born into, you can't let a difficult past define your future.
I agree.
And but secondly, I think that just from a personal, you know, point of view, my mother was born in Northeast near the shrimp boat. Okay, my father, after moving from, you know, South Carolina, lived as a child growing up on the other side of East Capitol Street, near Central Avenue and East Capitol Street, right off of Bass Place. And certainly we know that those communities have changed. They have evolved. Back then, there weren't food deserts. There were Black businesses. There were Black grocery stores. There were fresh this. There was fresh that. There was entertainment. There were the Boys and Girls Club. Yeah, we know that after the riots in 68, things really changed. And things are changing again. But I would argue to Lori, and I'd like for you to comment on this, that, you know, all is not lost.
No, there's hope. And we are definitely keeping hope alive. One of the unique things about Black Women Thriving East of the River that I applaud is that they want to hear from the community. So we've had focus groups, and we're continuing to have focus groups so that we can hear from people like Lori, so that we can have a coming together of sharing resources and information, and to make sure that the work we're doing is on point and centered to the needs of the people in the community. I don't know of another organization that's doing that. So that was one of the things that attracted me to them and have had me to continue to work with them.
What are you hearing in the focus groups? What, if anything, has surprised you?
Let me think about that for a second.
That's all right. Yeah, and that's you know, real talk, because you know what you needed. You know what you, as can I call you a health activist?
Sure.
You certainly know what is needed, but you know, two heads are better than one. 28 heads are better than one. So please, yeah.
So one of the main things that I'm hearing, and we talked about it briefly, women, black women especially, in Ward 7 and 8, we have so much on our plates. We're the backbones of our family. Many of us are raising our grandchildren, things of that sort. So when we have a health crisis, we don't always give ourselves permission to put ourselves first and our needs first. And so many times, even in our family structure, we just go head on into the battle without thinking about all the things we could have done. Case in point, in one of the focus groups, they were asking me about my caregivers. Mm. And I mentioned that I only have one son. And they were asking me, well, did he get therapy when you were going through this? And I was like, I never thought about he might need therapy. But I believe it's never too late. So I asked him, I said, did you feel like it would have helped you had you had therapy or someone else to talk to? And he said he had a six-month-old baby at the time, and his mother was diagnosed with cancer. And he was like, I didn't have time to think about myself. I had to get into an action plan. I'm dealing with the needs of my infant and my mother. And I think that is a picture that many of us are facing. So we're just an autopilot. Let's just do what we have to do to get through this. Not even thinking about, are there other resources, or not having forums to talk about, well, I did this, you might consider that. And that's one of the things that Black Women Thriving has provided for me, especially in that community of 28 to 30 professional women, some still other lay members. I'm not the only lay member. I'm just thankful for the relationships formed and the conversations we've had. And I think that's a big thing. We haven't had the conversations before. Everyone has been working in isolation. And so that's one of the things that Black Women Thriving provides.
That's interesting. How is your son? I'm sure he's happy that you are not just surviving but thriving, and he can thump his chest and said, I helped you
through. I think he's happy.
Yeah, I think he would be too. Talk to me about those conversations also, Nakisha, because you said right now there are just a handful of resources, but the vision, as you mentioned, of 30 more things. If you had your druthers, what would, you know, Black Women Thriving look like in another 4 years?
That's a really good question.
Because there's so much that needs to be done, and you can't just jump in and fix everything right away.
A huge part of this work, again, is, and I lifted it up in the name, is the narrative. And even though, and this is related to what Lori talked about on the phone as well, there are Boys and Girls Clubs. There are a number of organizations that are providing fresh food. There are even like a number of organizations that we're finding that are providing support to women who are navigating healthcare. But for some reason, the services are not reaching the population. And so our hope is that we will be a conduit Ed for bringing those resources together and helping them to actually get where they're most needed just by our relationships, and help other organizations to do this work in a really relational and systemic way, because we can't forget about the systems piece. There are, you know, real historical reasons why, you know, there are the access and the resources in our communities are limited, and we have to continue to address that. Yet at the same time, on the strength side, those relationships will really help more people learn more about the resources that we have and that are available. And so what we are trying to do, and I think will be one of the easier parts of what we do, is helping to connect those resources to people in the community so that they're in networks. Like, we've been able to talk to women and bring them together, and we know that this is an effective way to reach them. And we have ambassadors that are doing this work. How can this be a part of the way that you're doing the work, or how can we collaborate with you to ensure that those resources get to be where they're needed?
Yeah, I can see, as Marcia was just saying, there are people who are doing some good things, but if everyone is toiling in the vineyard, working in isolation, and they don't know how to connect with other people who are doing different good things, and if you can't get everyone under one tent, then the community can suffer because the resource is right across the street. But if you never look across the street, or you don't have the wherewithal to, you know, to find out where you can get, you know, a free breast exam, where you can get some kind of, you know, mental health support, or where you can find a job, because you may be a skilled person. You may have an education, Lori. Not everyone across the river is uneducated, but you still need a hand up, as you talked about, uplifting that part of the community that you just don't know. And hopefully it's kind of that each one teach ones. If you can get everybody under and you can give everybody, you know, a bit of assistance, then it can really kind of develop. But what is the next big thing that you want to tackle as far as resources?
It really is on the work that we're doing with health systems, and really ensuring that there's more engagement in the conversation. We've got the community at the table. They're telling us, we need, if you want us to be successful in job training programs, we need transportation. We need childcare. We need hours that work for us. We need a level of flexibility. Same thing with healthcare. Like, we need flexibility because we might not be able to take off work. So these hours don't work if you're trying to build it for us. And so the next part of our work is really including people that are decision makers within health systems, and really having conversations with them about what they can do. There is a level of, I don't know. You know, there's a level of bias that we all have, and some of that is just unknown. But then there's a level where the system is actively working. And so we are also trying to ensure that those employers understand. Some of it, again, might be unintentional, that this is something that's working against what our ultimate goals are. And then something else that is very close that's happening is this skills gap. So we do, like, there is going to be a new hospital that is coming to Ward 8. There's already an urgent care facility that's there. And the healthcare sector is growing. So we want to be a part of ensuring that people from our community, women from our community, have the skills that are needed to fill the jobs that are needed within those facilities that are coming. And so we really think that is something that's going to be pressing that is something that we need to work feverishly to do over the next couple of years, to ensure that as this new facility opens, that our community is not only going there to get great services, that they are also providers and they're able to provide for their families, and our communities are better because of that facility being in the community as an employer as well.
You said something that really struck me. Just yesterday, we reported on, and I don't know whether or not you heard about this new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation that said that daycare in the District of Columbia for children is the highest in the country. It averages $27,000 a year. Home daycare is a little less at $19,000 a year. And so let us assume for a moment that we are talking about working Black women, you know, gainfully employed, you know, have their stuff together. But $27,000 to put your child in daycare is a long road to hoe. And it can be a financial impediment to other things in a healthy household. And I'm sure that the stresses of that can immediately impact everything else. Mm-hmm. And that was really shocking to me. But the other thing that I was going to ask, and you really mentioned it, with the new hospital coming. On the St. Elizabeth's, old St. Elizabeth's property and the like, and the changing face of east of the river. You have gentrification and everything else. How do you think that's going to impact your work?
Mm-hmm. We are working to ensure that it impacts our work for the better. We know that the hospital is coming. We are trying to work, and we're not the only organization that's working. Mm-hmm. You know, there are wonderful organizations like the Ward 8 Health Council and the Health Alliance Network that are working also to ensure that, and many others that, I'm sorry, when you start naming names, you may forget
don't
some.
Leave out
so
right.
Everybody who's
and
involved
you can't, and you can't,
in this process.
And you can't name everybody because this is only a one-hour show. But... name who you want, because that's part of the piece that we were talking about, everybody under the tent. Please go ahead. Mm-hmm.
But we want to make that a good story to tell. We know that same old story of how when new nice facilities come to our communities, they're not for people who've been in the community and suffered with it for a long time. We want to tell a different story, that this new facility is coming, that our community is going to use it, and our community is going to be enriched by it. And so we are trying to do the work with our community partners to ensure that that's the story that we can tell in a couple of years.
And that the residents there are part and employed there so that they can stay in Ward 7 and 8, because with gentrification, many of them are being pushed into Merlin and other areas. Mm-hmm. Also, Nakisha, can you talk about our focus groups that are coming up?
Oh, yeah, please do.
We are...
did I miss a joke? Please go right ahead.
So this is a part of our process. So we're going to be doing focus groups in perpetuity. So we do have some upcoming groups that are talking about informing one of the what we call patient navigation. And so what Marcia was talking about, being a cancer patient and having someone who will walk with you through this journey. So for the things that you need support with, helping you get those things, whether it's food, they have clinical navigators that will help people actually navigate their care plans. And they exist within the community. But again, they're not being utilized. And so we are really trying to talk to people who are current cancer patients and cancer survivors and caregivers about what their experiences have been and what is likely. Like, where do they need to hear about that this service exists? What actually, is there anything missing from what's being provided? How ultimately is it, would it help them or would it have helped them if it were structured in a certain way? So we have a focus group that's coming up later this month where we're going to be talking to people about that experience. Certainly I mentioned the work with the Patient Bill of Rights. We have a document that we think is pretty good right now, but we also want to get community involvement around that. And so
if someone wants to participate, is the information on the website?
They can go to, there's a contact us portion on our website.
Okay.
And they can go and let us know that they are interested in being involved in upcoming focus groups, hearing about events that we're a part of. I don't think I mentioned it, but we're going to be a part of an event on August 26th at Oxen Run Park. There's going to be a women's tent there. It's part of a broader community health fair that's been happening for, I think, at least 7 or 8 years in that community. But people can come and find out about the Bill of Rights. It's going to be a fun and interactive event. And you can come and you can get a copy of what we're proposing as the Bill of Rights. You can learn how to get more involved with us. There'll be some nice giveaways that you can take away. So we're also looking to see people there.
Well, as I said earlier, the website is thrivingeotr.org, Black Women Thriving East of the River. That website address, as well as this podcast, as is the case every night after 8:30, will be posted on our website on whur.com, so you can click and get that information. I want to thank both of you, Nakisha Neal Jones, Marsha Williamson. This has been a pleasure, and I'm so good to hear about the kind of good work that you're doing, and looking forward to hearing more about this story 4 years and 40 years from now. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, July 19th. I'm Harold Fisher.